That was Sister Simone, in case you were wondering, Sister Simone Campbell, her interview with Krista Tippett. You may know Sister Simone as one of the nuns on the bus. In that interview, as you heard, that was Krista Tippett asking her the question, she goes on to describe that Zen meditation practice that she has, which is the foundation of her contemplative life. As she tells it, the cushion in her Zen practice, the cushion is the easy part. On the cushion, she feels with total confidence and absolute knowing that everything is connected to everything. We are all one body. And then she leaves the cushion, and the not-so-easy part starts. And yet, off the cushion is when contemplative practice matters most. Contemplative practice means nothing without the contemplative life. These moments, like Sister Simone describes, moments where we are deeply aware of our interconnectedness, these moments show up in many of our lives. I mean, whether through that a Zen meditation practice or some other spiritual practice, or sometimes they show up like a gift, like a surprise, like, oh. When it happens, this kind of awareness, it can be overwhelmingly beautiful and yet also sometimes painful and terrifying. Now, I don't mean those moments where we say we are interdependent or where we think about it, but those moments where we really feel it in our guts, when we feel we are one body. One body with those we most admire, one body with those we most despise, one body with the most vulnerable, one body with the most powerful, one body, all of us. In these gut awareness moments, life is calling us to pay attention, wake up. There's more to life than just you. You're part of something bigger, so much bigger. There's so much going on way beyond what you can see or control. You're not in charge. This awareness can sometimes feel like really good news, and sometimes it's unbearable. Either way, from this awareness, as Sister Simone says, we realize that all we really have to offer in this life is our willing heart and our open hands. And with these small yet worthy offerings, we walk towards all that is hungry in our world, walk towards and with all the other members of our one body, and simply try to bear witness. Now, perhaps like many of you, I was raised with the idea that if I did the right thing and worked hard, in most cases, the outcome I sought would turn out. This strong ethic of self-determination impacts how many of us think about much of our lives, how we parent, our friendships, how we do our jobs, how we act in the world, everything. We base our assessment of right action in the efficacy of that action, which means, though, if things don't turn out the way we'd hoped, then we question if the action we took was actually the right action. Because it should have, if it was right, it should have all worked out. Or if the relationship doesn't go the way we thought, maybe we should never have tried, never said yes, never taken that risk to love at all. Living with an awareness of our interconnectedness brings a new way of thinking, where we let go of our ideas of right action that necessarily leads to right outcome, and instead live with the reality that there are no guarantees, no matter how carefully or responsibly we may have acted. Living with this reality and yet somehow remain open and willing and present. And some of you know the story of my children, who my partner and I adopted through foster care. Early on, we were just exploring our options, and we were in the informational session with the department when the worker said, you know, you always hear the horror stories, the kids before, but you don't know what's possible with consistent love. What kind of change can happen? This was like sweet talking us, because we both so believe in the hope of transformation by way of steadfast love. We were enrolled in the foster adopt classes within a few weeks. We felt called to parent a child who had been through abuse or neglect, maybe a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old. We read books about toddlers who had missed early attachment and the path for teaching those critical life skills. The books were terrifying, but we clung to our capacity to offer that consistent, full-hearted love, and the hope that love could heal any wound. When the call came for that 2-day-old baby girl, we thought they'd made a mistake. Maybe they meant 2 years old. But carrying that 5-pound infant down the hospital elevator just a few hours later, it all became very real. This was no mistake. We spent the next few weeks, however, in constant fear. It was what they call a high-risk placement, which meant that birth mom still had parental rights. Every time the phone rang, we were sure it was the department calling to say she couldn't stay. We wouldn't let our friends buy us anything, and we didn't want to name her or act as if she was going to stay. Imagine the heartbreak, we thought, if she has to leave and then we're left with all her stuff. We couldn't. A couple weeks after we got that first call, I was talking to my sister, telling her how we were being careful not to love the baby too much. She might not get to stay. With a real sisterly love, she responded, "That is so stupid." To her, she said, "You're already her mom's. You can try to be all distant, but you'll miss out on what's happening right now. And if she doesn't stay, your hearts will still be broken." We knew she was right, but we were so scared. A few days later, we were telling our friends about our fears, and she told us plainly, "You need to name her." So finally that night, in our kitchen, we did. We took that great leap of faith to open our hearts, relying on the mysterious bigger picture, and walked willing into whatever would come next. Nearly 10 years later, the beautiful presence of our daughter, Graciela, her name means she who is a gift, as well as our son Joseph, whose similar call came 2.5 years later, they seem to offer this tidy package to prove the goodness of opening your heart like this. It's like evidence for all those who like to say things happen for a reason. However, as any parent knows, as anyone who has gone all in on loving knows, there is nothing tidy here. While the legal piece of our high-risk placement is in our distant past, the risk of loving our kids has never and will never go away. And there is nothing guaranteed about how it's all going to turn out. There are some things that love, even consistent and courageous love, can't fix or save. We don't talk about this very much. When we talk about opening our hearts and loving, we talk about the rewards or the success stories. But the truth is, when we open our hearts to receive everything, we get everything. When we walk through life willing, we experience greater loss, greater disappointment, and failure. And it's so tempting when this happens to look back and second guess, like, oh, we should have been more cautious. But these outcomes don't make the choice to love or live with an open heart wrong. They don't mean that we shouldn't try. We don't show up to love because of some predetermined guarantee. We don't show up because we know for sure where we are going or how it's all going to turn out. We show up because because of who we already are. The reality of our relationship in the here and now, our promise to keep loving, and our commitment of faith that says we are one body. The invitation of our faith is to go all in on life, all in on wherever the path of a faithful life might lead, all in on humanity in all of its difficult, disappointing, infuriating, beautiful, transformational reality. In our practice of faith, our contemplative life, may we cultivate our willing hearts and be food for one another and this yearning, hungry world. Blessed be. Amen.
I love that song. It's a great song. It's a powerful message that truly is our Unitarian Universalist values. Many years ago, when I was the parish minister at the Winthrop Street Universalist Church in Augusta, Maine, and I can't remember exactly what year it was either 1975 or 1976, I had the pleasure of meeting the social activist and singer Holly Near, and when I invited her to give a concert at our church, and it was a brilliant performance. After the concert, she and a few fellow musicians, along with a few of us from the church, came over to the parsonage for a post-show reception. As we were thanking Holly for her performance, she spoke to her need to make a difference in the world, in the lives of other people. She shared that how sometimes she was just so overwhelmed with and despondent with the reports of torture around the world, of the proliferation of nuclear power, of the escalating militarism, and the rampant sexism and racism and social inequity that was so prevalent in our nation. Her brother Neil, who was part of her musician team, smiled at her, gave Holly a hug, and then said to her, "Yeah, so what else do you have to do with your life, Holly?" It was a moment in time that I know I will never forget. Indeed, what else is there for any one of us but to care for one another? What else is there but to make a difference with our lives in the world? Trying to make some sense out of the world that you and I live in, gaining a modicum of understanding, seeking some purpose and meaning for our living days, that's part and parcel of what our Unitarian Universalist faith tradition is all about. And make no mistake, this chosen faith of ours, this Unitarian Universalism, it's a very hard faith journey. I call it a hard faith because our liberal religious stance asks us not just to enter into religious community and then cease our own individual spiritual journeying, not just to find comfort in repeating an affirmation or a covenant and stop there in our own personal religious growth. No, ours is a hard faith because it asks, well, let me take that back. It's a hard faith because it does not have answers as much as it asks us, each one of us, to never, ever stop questioning, to ever continue to challenge and wrestle with our values, our evolving beliefs, so that we might always, always live out of what we say we believe. One of my favorite anecdotal stories tells of the alcoholic who boarded a downtown bus carrying a large cage wrapped in brown paper. As he sat down holding this cage wrapped in brown paper on his lap, the rest of the passengers on the bus stared at him. Pretty soon, one of the passengers had enough courage to ask the drunk man what was in the cage. "A mongoose," the inebriated man replied. "But what do you need a mongoose for?" to frighten off the snakes of the tremors, delirium, answered this most articulate alcoholic. And the passenger said, but those are not real snakes. I know, said the drunk, but you see, it's not a real mongoose either. One of the most important functions of any faith, especially ours, is to deal with life's snakes, be they real or imagined, to serve as a palliative for the pain and the stress and the fears that accompany being human. Until recently, Unitarian Universalism has not always performed that function very well. One of the reasons is that in the past, we liberal religionists have devoted considerable energy to pointing self-righteous fingers at other faith traditions and shouting, it's not a real mongoose, it's not a real mongoose, or it's not my mongoose. The operative question with which Unitarian Universalism has previously approached the religious quest has been the query, is it true? Are the beliefs of various religious faiths defensible before the bar of empirical inquiry? And yet, I want to suggest the far more important questions are, does it work? Is it helpful? Whether or not the mongoose is real or not, does it help to ward off life snakes? In other words, I want to emphasize that religious experience is at least as important as religious knowledge. One of my fervent hopes is always that each and every member of a congregation like this one, might feel free to bring your questions, to bring your struggles, to bring the issues and concerns of your living days, and let them be part of our shared religious journeying and questioning together. For in truth, all of us here are wrestling with similar or sometimes the same issues and concerns as we each struggle to have the values, the beliefs that we espouse be mirrored in our daily actions and in our efforts. The function of the gathered religious community, the purpose of this church is to provide those opportunities that enable its participants to develop the qualities of religious maturity. It's here that we seek emotional maturity and spiritual depth. It's here that we attempt to provide a framework for responding to the spiritual needs of individuals. It's here that we offer opportunities for deeper fellowship, for a sense of a caring community and a shared ministry together. It's here in this kind of place that we seek to make available avenues of service, not only within this congregation, but also to envision opportunities for putting our words and our values into action, for living daily what we say we believe. There are so many ways that we maintain and nurture and grow and work and help to create that kind of religious community, the community that we are, that we seek to become. Membership in a church, especially membership in a church like this, Foothills Unitarian Church, is really all about evangelism. Not the kind of evangelism that assumes our religious path is better than anybody else's. And not the kind of evangelism that impels us to change people's minds about their individual faith journeys. And it's not the kind of evangelism that imposes our religious views on unwilling converts. No. Healthy congregations, healthy Unitarian Universalist evangelism is simply, or not so simply, the process of building and sustaining a healthy congregation, of creating in our congregation a welcoming, inviting, staffed and planned to meet one of the most basic of human needs, the need to be religious, the need to seek meaning, to make connections one with another. The objective of our being together in this shared ministry is to go beyond just showing up at 9 o'clock or at 11 o'clock and being handed an order of service and finding your seat. It goes beyond that. Our being together here in this congregation is for all of us to go beyond mere attendance on a Sunday morning. It's to go beyond this Sunday morning experience and take our values into the world. It's for us, each one of us, to find our way through the myriad avenues for fellowship and for service and for deepening community, first here together, and then to find ways to become integral in this shared ministry together, and then to uncover deeper ways of our spiritual yearning and seeking and discover ways that we might further grow in our shared journeys. To recognize through all the shifts and changes, to recognize through this natural process of growth that we're here in the business of promoting and seeking transformation for our lives. That, in truth, is what we're about. Why we are gathered. Why we congregate here at the Foothills Unitarian Church. We come together to deepen ourselves in our spiritual seeking to the end that we will be transformed. And in turn, that in our efforts and values that we can go beyond these walls and might transform the larger world. Think about what that just implies. If we all go beyond mere attendance and cursory participation in this religious community, if we all work together in harmony and shared purpose and focused vision, if we all work together to build the kind of welcoming, inclusive, accepting, and inviting church community that we hold as our dream of what a true beloved community can be, and if we all strive to teach a modern liberal religious way of growing into a maturity and spiritual depth of living with strength in today's world, if we all work together, help each other, help one another, rise to a higher level of depth of spirit, freeing people of impediments and hindrances which prevent us from rising to that highest quality of human spirituality and emotional maturity. If we could be more cooperative, more considerate, more sympathetic, more neighborly, more interested in helping neighbors, one another, to achieve a better life, to the end that we might be more able to build better communities and eventually to build a better world. That's what transformation, why we're here, that's what it's all about. That's what our faith stands, what Unitarian Universalism, what this congregation seeks to be about. I realize I've only been with this congregation a short time, but I do know that this religious community is open, and I know it's willing. That you have the willing heart to go beyond and to let this faith of ours make a difference in our lives and, yes, in the world. So may it ever be. Amen.